Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined today by our super producer in between his daddy duties, Jason Ruggiero. Jason, how are you tonight?
Good to be here again.
It is great to be back.
Back in the saddle.
Yeah, we've had like a month layoff now. This has probably been the longest in-season layoff since we started this.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Whole shebang. But, you know, sometimes life happens, and what are you going to do?
Yeah, we made a couple attempts in there, but...
Yeah, you know...
Babies and bad Mexican food got in the way.
Life, man, yeah, it just happens. Let me tell you, that was some rough Mexican food, too. Also, not that anybody listening to this podcast cares to know.
Well, I don't know, it's pretty entertaining.
So the whole first month of the season is basically behind us now. Leaves us with a lot to talk about with the Pirates and the Indians. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Erie Seawolves today and their start to the season. But before we do that, Jason, I want to talk about new commissioner Rob Manfred, who has had a very interesting start to his tenure, I suppose, as commissioner.
He's not scurred.
He hasn't had I wouldn't say a bad start. He's maybe a polarizing start to his tenure, depending on your opinions on some of his views. But his most recent splash into the controversial topic circle has been with the designated hitter in the National League, which he stated that all of the pitcher injuries that have been happening to these poor pitchers who are just dropping like flies from having to stand in the batter's box, all of these injuries have not changed his stance on the designated hitter. And in fact, he stated that he is still a status quo person on the DH in the National League. Jason, your thoughts on Rob Manfred and his position on the DH?
I think that's a fine position to have on the DH. I mean, if you're going to change, I don't think it should be because people, you know, I know they blew up their Achilles or whatever, and Max Scherzer hurt his widow thumb or whatever, but I don't think that's a good reason to change, you know? We were talking before the podcast, and I kind of said my view of the DH is I think it is a little strange, you know, the one league one way and the one the other, just because in the American League and more even in the National League, they just don't put any emphasis on the pitcher actually hitting. And so if the pitcher's not going to actually hit, I just think we should scrap the whole thing. Like, I'm all for the pitcher hitting, but like, let's actually have pitchers that, you know, I don't know, take batting practice or don't just flail wildly and spin in the ground like a top, because that's not fun.
Yeah, and I will say when the American League pitchers come into the National League, that's probably when you notice the most it's not enjoyable watching pitchers hit.
Well, because before, I think part of it is before Interleague was like a designated series of weekends, so they would at least like have the pitchers take batting practice leading up to those games. But now it's like sprinkled throughout the schedule.
Yeah, right.
And they're just kind of like, eh, forget it.
We can't do this all the time.
Yeah, we can't have pitchers take... What do you want to do? Have them take batting practice all year? That's kind of my, I loved when we went to Garrett Cole's first start and the bases were loaded or there were two guys on and he hit, like, a two-run single.
Wasn't that amazing?
I love that. But, like, what I don't love is to watch, like, Corey Kluber bat with the bases loaded and just, like, do nothing.
He's standing in the box like Henry Rowengardner in Rookie of the Year. Just...
Like, that doesn't do much for me, I'm not going to lie.
The far back corner, as far away from the plate as he can be.
Yeah, he's basically like, my goal right now is to not get hurt.
I feel kind of the same way. I'm very apathetic towards change. I'm certainly not a champion for the DH in the National League. I don't think I would be upset as the traditionalists, who, like Bob Walk, the Pirates announcer and former pitcher, whose his thing is like ban the DH. I don't feel that passionately about that, but I don't also you know, like I'm not saying that you should have it. I kind of like the pitcher's batting. Maybe it's the traditionalist in me and the fear of change that I have constantly, but I don't want it, but I would not be upset if it happened.
Yeah. No, that's all right.
So that's where I stand.
I understand.
Very middle ground, like I am with most things. Cause you know what? It's not gonna end baseball if they adopt the DH, and it's not going to ruin baseball if they don't.
That's true.
Baseball will just continue to be baseball, and that's it. And it's a thing of beauty.
I just want to see something happen.
Yeah.
And watching some guy who hasn't picked up a bat since he was like 19 years old, it's not very exciting.
I agree. Okay. So we're kind of in agreement with that, I guess.
I mean, I like to see Madison Bumgarner hit.
Yeah, he's fun.
Because he can hit.
Gerrit Cole, he looks like a man when he steps in that box.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, if we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's do it up.
Yeah.
But if we're not going to do it, which seems to be
the underlying sentiment.
Which seems to be the general trend.
Yeah.
Like, let's just stop embarrassing ourselves.
All right. Yeah, I'm there with you. I don't know. Maybe we'll have the fans chime in on the tweet box, see what kinds of responses we get from the general public.
All right.
So let's talk about some Pirates related things first, Jason. And I want to start off on kind of a neat positive note, especially for the Northwestern Pennsylvania area. Before we get really talking about the action on the field, there's an Edinburgh Elementary student named Jacob Haw, who has raised some money for the Pirates program's Wins for Kids. If you've been watching the Pirates on Root Sports at all over the last 3 weeks, the Pirates have been promoting this like crazy. It's like their feel-good story at the beginning of the season. But Jacob raised $2,521 in a three-week period of time for Wins for Kids, which is a program that raises funds to support the Pirates charities. And I believe they raise money for the Prader-Willi syndrome, which is a disease that I think Clint Hurdle's daughter has.
Okay.
So Jacob did a great job. His goal, he wanted to get to 3,000, so he wasn't even done raising money for his charities yet. And donations can be made online, which I'll link to where you can make the donations once we post the podcast as well. And just make your donation in honor of Jacob if you could. So we'll leave some directions on there, but it's kind of a neat, cool story for a local kid who's done something really, really amazing that's kind of being recognized, and I think it's kind of important to point those things out as well. So,
yeah, that's great.
Congratulations, Jacob. Great job there.
Yeah, that's a great job.
So now let's kind of dig into the baseball now. So I'm ready to get going after a month of staying off the air here, Jason.
So now that the positive stuff's out of the way.
Yeah, let's dig into the rest of the season for the Pirates. It's kind of weird because I have in my notes that the Pirates are off to a slow start, which if you've been watching them, they are. Like, I mean, their start has been very, very frustrating to the season, but they're still 12-10.
I wish we were 12-10.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think that says a lot about how far the Pirates have come in the last few years. The fact that we look at a 12-10 start and being third in the National League Central after the first month of the season as kind of a slow start.
Right. That's a good sign.
You can kind of look at the Pirates and you can see why they've been frustrating to watch early on in the season. Because going into tonight, so tonight they're getting ready to square off against St. Louis. AJ Burnett's on the bump tonight, which should be getting underway here pretty soon. But going into tonight, the Pirates were last in walks in the National League with 41, and they were tied for the most in strikeouts with 185. These trends are not good. Those are like alarming number when you're last in walks and tied for most in strikeouts. That's not good. So they're currently hitting as a team 230 with a 280 on base percentage. And again, my favorite stat because it's adjusted to 100 and it's kind of easy to understand is OPS plus. So as an offense, their team OPS plus is 78.
Not good.
Not good at all. A lot of it's kind of hinged on you know, Andrew McCutchen and his slow start, I think, because he's really the catalyst in the lineup. He's the guy that you look at and, you know, you say, hey, we need some runs. We're counting on you to produce. And he hasn't, I think, going into tonight, he's hitting maybe like .179 or something like that.
Do you think Andrew McCutchen's hurt?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I think
no
so
one's
too.
Saying anything, but his knee was dogging him all spring. And stuff like that, it doesn't magically get better.
No, I'm pretty sure he's hurt. I'm on the same page as you. So he does not feel good. As Eric Carabel said the other day, he needs a vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can just look and you can see. I mean, there was a ball he hit against the Cubs. It was a ground ball. And, you know, he looked like he was running down the line, you know, fast. It looked like he was running full speed. And, you know, without timing it, it's hard to tell whether he's lost any speed running down the bases like that. But it's just the balls he's hitting are not.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that, you know, that loud crack to it and, you know, a solid line drive into the gap, you know, like you're kind of accustomed to seeing.
Right. When he starts hitting all those, like, warning track shots and, you know, it starts to raise a few questions.
Now, but as much as the offense has struggled, the pitching has been great to start off the year. The team ERA going into tonight is at 2.95. That's second best in the National League. He has a FIP, and our team FIP is 2.92. So there's, you know, it's right in line with where they should be pitching. That's an ERA plus of 1.31. So again, adjusted to 100, you know, that's exceptional. We're striking out 9 batters per 9, and we're only walking 2.9 batters per 9, which is right around league average. In fact, the Pirates starters have the highest WAR in the National League with 1.7 wins above replacement already. The bullpen has been kind of the shaky part of the pitching in the early goings of the season. We're 8th in bullpen WAR.
Bullpens.
0.2 of a win above replacement, but the pitching has been great. The hitting has not been great, and this is kind of like the frustrating Pirate performance that you're used to seeing in the years prior to this, where like the Pirates would go on these awful losing streaks and it would be like, you know, the hitters would be lights out, but the pitchers just couldn't do anything. And then, you know, it would seem like the next week it would just be a reversal of that. And that's kind of what I'm seeing now, where we're like, man, our pitchers are just dealing and we can't get runs on the board to support these great outings that they're having. And then, so early on in the year, whenever we have put some runs on the board, the bullpen already has 5 losses in relief, which is tied for most in the National League, I think, with maybe 2 other teams. So
you don't need to complain about bullpens to me, man.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get quite an earful about bullpens in the upcoming moments. But the thing about the Pirates bullpen that's probably been the most alarming to me has been Mark Melancon, who's been one of the most consistent pitchers in the Pirates bullpen since we traded for him. And Melancon's performance is a little easier to quantify because of just pitchers being tracked with every single thing that they do, from the number of times that they itch their nose, you know, to the number of times that they lick their fingers. So Melancon's velocity this season is markedly down on his cut fastball, which traditionally averages 91 miles an hour. He's down to 88 miles an hour.
Ugh.
3 miles an hour is an alarming amount of velocity to lose from one season to the next.
Especially as a closer.
Yeah. Now, correlation doesn't equal causation, and, you know, a lot of times you don't know what causes what, but Melancon's walk rate has more than doubled. His walk rate so far this season has been 9%, which was up from 4% last year. So if you can imagine lower velocity, higher walk rates, you know, lack of command accompanying your lower velocity, that's not good. His contact is up by 10% from last year. So people are seeing him okay. His contact rate was 82.8% last year, up to 92% this year.
Yeah, I like how you just summed that up, like, not good.
Not good. He's throwing beach balls up there.
So, okay.
And I mean, his last couple outings, he hasn't got touched up, but the velocity's still not coming back. And I mean, I don't know whether you can survive at 88 with a cut fastball like that, but I would prefer not to have to find out.
Yeah. So what's the way forward?
I don't know what you do because you don't really, I mean, the most logical thing you could think of would be Tony Watson
right
at the end of games. I mean, I'm not a person that believes that you have to have a closer. But since everybody in baseball is, if you're going to have a guy pitching in the ninth inning that's going to pitch in games where you're up by 3 runs or less, I mean, if that's the way that you're going to manage your team, then Tony Watson would, I would assume, would be the next logical guy to step into that role. But he's left-handed, and managers have that terrible fear of, you know, the platoon splits with the left-handed closer. So
he hasn't been exactly setting the world on fire.
No, he hasn't. You know, all Pirates fans are just on pins and needles every time Archimedes Caminero comes into the game throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. But his control hasn't been the most spectacular.
The people who should be on pins and needles are the ones sitting behind home plate.
Yeah, the one in the batter's box should probably be the most
the umpire should be scared.
But, you know, you seriously don't want a guy coming in a close game who you're not sure how well he's going to handle the strike zone.
No. That's so bad news.
You know, I don't know. Pittsburgh's bullpen has, and it started out this way last year too. You know, Pittsburgh kind of had a rough start with Justin Wilson getting touched up early on in the year and not looking great. And things balanced out. But I guess the most alarming thing for me would be the lack of Melanson's velocity and it not coming back at this point in the season. So
yeah, maybe when the weather heats up, he'll heat up.
Yeah, maybe that's what.
Maybe.
Yeah. So going back to the offense, on Tuesday, Josh Harrison left midway through the game and was replaced by Jung Ho Gung, who then got the start on Wednesday. I haven't seen any updates on Harrison, so that leads me to believe that it's nothing nagging. And honestly, before we started recording, I didn't even look at the Pirates lineup, which I should have done. I might take a look at that while you're chit-chatting about the Tribe there. But Gung, who just at times looks absolutely lost at the plate, in his last couple plate appearances has done okay. And you know, in 29 plate appearances, it takes one or two hits to really fluctuate your average. But, you know, and that's where he's at. He's at 29 plate appearances. He's triple slashing 269, 310, 346. But, you know, to me, the most important thing is just kind of watching his swing. And there are times where he just looks completely lost, which is, I guess, understandable when you consider that he was coming from the KBO, where most baseball pundits have said it's equivalent to our AA system over here.
Right.
So you kind of would expect Gung to look lost at times. He's looked great in the field. You know, he's come in a couple games in at short and a couple games at third the last couple days with Harrison taking some time off. So I guess it's good that we're getting any kind of production from him, and we have yet to see the power, which I'm assuming will probably be one of the last things to translate if it does,
probably if it arrives.
Right. So,
overall, what's your feeling on your Korean import?
Like I said, there are times that he looks totally lost, and I feel like if you have any savvy pitcher on the mound, it's not going to be hard to dominate him in an at-bat.
Yeah.
He's not a guy I would ever want coming up in a clutch situation. And you know how baseball works. I mean, he could just as easily come up with a hit as not on any particular pitch, but as laws of averages dictate, watching his swing does not instill me with a lot of confidence that he's going to have tons of success right away. Like if he hit 269 on the season, I would be shocked. His two strike approach is really weird because he has this high leg kick most of the time in his swing. You know, like a super high leg kick, and you can see where he generates a lot of power in his swing. And then he gets two strikes on him, and he barely picks up his front foot with his two-strike swing, and it's almost like he just, like, slaps at the ball, which is all right, you know, if you're like a fast little speedy wanty air kind of guy.
That's the thing. I mean, we've seen a lot of players from the eastern part of the world use that approach.
Right.
But they're not built like this guy.
Yeah, they're not power. Hee-Sop Choi didn't come in trying to, you know, slap a ball the other way.
Yeah.
So the other day I just happened to look and see, because I was curious for myself. Right now he's hitting 200 in two strike counts. So anytime he gets two strikes against them, he's hitting about, you know, 200. So I'll be curious to see at the end of the year where his two strike average is at, but I don't know.
Hopefully it's above 200, but
yeah, we'll see.
Although, I mean, a lot of people don't hit well with two strikes.
Yeah, right. But just with the way that his swing looks, I mean, and again, I probably thought Ichiro's swing looked, especially because at the time I was like playing high school baseball, which was very fundamental, but I'm sure I thought Ichiro's swing at the time was just like the radical thing I'd ever seen.
2000 hits later.
Yeah. Turns out he knows what he's doing enough, I guess. So yeah. But I guess I'll be curious to see how he progresses at the major league level. It can't be an easy thing to learn on the fly facing the most ridiculous competition on the planet at your job. So I hope he does, for him and for the Pirates, turn out to be a productive player. So just something worth keeping an eye on, his progression over the next few years. But I'll definitely be keeping a very close eye on his two strike approach and how that evolves, because that's something that's kind of stood out to me from the start. Something positive to look at offensively would be Starling Marte, who has had quite the power spike since he's been moved to the five hole primarily in the lineup. Now, I mean, obviously, again, these numbers are in a very small sample size, 19-20 games. But coming into tonight, he's had a career slugging of 450. Marte's currently slugging 521 with six home runs. A career isolated slugging percentage, 170. His ISO this season, 274. Every ball he hits is like for extra bases.
Yeah.
Here's the frightening thing. He's striking out a lot.
like a
ton. But he's not walking, which is like super alarming. Like these strikeout to walk rates, they just can't keep up for the whole season, or else he's going to hit like 198. I'm going to pull it up here just so I can see. Just so I can make sure I'm not misinforming anyone about just how crazy his start has been to the season. But the whole long and beginning to this year is that when he hits the ball, it goes far. His home run to fly ball rate this year is 50%. 50. I didn't even know that was like a thing that could happen in 20 games. That's ridiculous.
It won't happen in the next 20 games.
Yeah. 50%. That's absurd. So yeah, let me pull up his strikeout to walk right here. So he has currently 27 strikeouts to 4 walks. That's not good.
You know, not to. You know who also isn't walking is Gregory Polanco.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, let me pull up Gregory, because I think Gregory Polanco only has 2 weeks to start off the year. He had like a weird start to his season, kind of like Marte, in that he's stolen like 7 bases already.
Yeah.
You know, he's on like just a thing, like if he hit all season, he'd have like, you know, he'd have like 90 stolen bases at the end of the year or whatever. But yeah, like he's doing the same thing. He has 22 strikeouts and only 3 walks, so he has 3 walks. And the thing about Polanco, you know, we knew Marte wasn't a patient hitter. So with Marte, it's
exactly what I was going to say.
It's not shocking, but like Polanco's whole thing.
He's supposed to be a patient hitter.
Yeah, like a disciplined
guy who's going to walk.
Like an on base fueled kind of guy. So it's kind of.
It's alarming.
Yeah. And, you know, Zips wasn't super high on his on base. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, well, I think he can probably outproduces Zips and Steamer projection. Like they projected his on base to be like 313, 305. But
now you're like,
oh man, he might be way short of that. If he keeps striking out at 26.8% clip and walking 3.7% of the time, Some of the, it's going to be kind of long stretches of the season not seeing Polanco on base.
Yeah.
So, you know, we at some point...
Sum that part of the conversation up with me saying that I replaced him. I didn't cut him. I just moved him to my bench on my fantasy team, and I replaced him with Jake Marisnyk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not good. I mean, at some point, they're going to...
He's better than Gregory Polanco right now.
They're going to have to evolve as hitters.
No, that's exactly it. They're going to have to...
Because
change or
right, you can't
suffer.
Keep going like this forever. It's just you can't walk that little, strike out that much. You know, in Marte's case, you can't hit for that much power. You can't keep doing that forever. So you're going to have to start adjusting at some point.
Well, I mean, at some point, too, like, if you show time and time again that you will not take or lay off a pitch, but you're going to crush the ball if it's anywhere near the strike zone... It's not going to take Cole Hamels long to figure out what to do to you.
Right, yeah. Yeah, pitching coaches are kind of excited about players like that. Oh, this guy does the same thing? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like our general discussion has gone this way, so I'm just going to kind of keep it going with the ups and downs, the positives, and then the negatives. It's like a real emotional roller coaster of goodness followed by badness. So, like, Marte, generally speaking, he's, like, off to a solid start, but can't keep this start up forever. Let's get back to something more positive, which would be Andrew McCutchen reaching his 1,000th hit against the Chicago Cubs. I believe it was he was the 33rd player. I didn't write it down, but I think he was the 33rd player for the Pirates to reach 1,000 hits. So, kind of a neat little milestone. Very early on in his career. So, you know, you don't like to start projecting ridiculous things like making it to 3,000 hits, but swoon over Andrew McCutchen, and I think he might do it, Jason. I think he could be a 3,000 hit guy. But I also said for the longest time that CC Sabathia would be the next 300 win pitcher, so I don't know how good I am as a barometer of player longevity.
Let's just move on.
Speaking of pitchers, Gerrit Cole, amazing start to the season, Jason.
Yes, he has been amazing.
If you will remember, one of my keys to the Pirates' success before the season was Gerrit Cole turning into an ace. Which,
oh baby, oh baby.
1.76 ERA, 2.19 FIP, 10.3 K to 9, which he's kind of really cranked up the strikeouts this season. Now, again, small sample size. Across 30 innings through his 5 starts, but very, very strong start to his season. I'll tell you, Jason, he's the pitcher that Pittsburgh deserves and the one it beats right now. That's.
I just want everyone to know that line was written into the notes.
I did not want to forget to say that. I was very excited to bring in that Dark Knight reference.
So I'm glad that you worked it in.
Yeah.
Excuse me why I dumped tater tots onto a plate.
No, please. I think it's important that the fans know that that's happening so that they just don't think that we're aloof of the tater tots going on to the plate.
I mean, listen, okay? There's only so much time to eat.
Hey, listen. New dad stuff, I understand, man. You're trying to podcast, raise a child, and make dinner.
So I choose tater tots.
And that's
which barely qualifies for the last. But you gotta make sacrifices somewhere.
Yeah. No, hey, yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, I live a life of leisure, having a life of leisure, having no children. So I'm watching like 3 baseball games while I record a podcast
and eating tater tots.
I already ate my tater tots because I don't have to worry about any.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, man, life's good for me. Life is good for me. It's significantly harder for you. I respect the hell out of you for being able to do anything while you have a kid.
I appreciate that.
Because I think all I'd want to do is take a nap.
I'd do that at work.
that's when you got to get your napping in.
Power naps.
So that's pretty much it for Pittsburgh. You ready to chit-chat about Cleveland?
I am.
Can I tell you my note that I wrote down for you on the agenda?
Yes, please do.
I wrote, Cleveland, don't panic yet. Everyone is bad.
That's kind of my That's kind of my general point.
Is that
you pretty much summed it up? Can I go eat my taste?
That was it.
Now?
Yeah, podcast is done.
Podcast Indian segment over.
Done.
But you know what? It's not entirely true anymore. Because, first of all, it's been ugly. All right, there's no beating around the bush on that. It's been ugly. And you want to talk about bad bullpens. I mean, when you can't barely score any runs, and then you hand your closer, like, a 3-run lead, it really burns to watch him blow that. And only get one out with a 3-run lead. And it was the first guy. He struck the first guy out, and then he proceeded to give up 7 straight hits. But anyways, I have a hard time, you know, dealing with the people on Twitter who just want to, like, shut it down. Like, they're ready to just talk about, like, Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon and like, they're like, okay, Indians stink.
Those are the same fans who 3 weeks into the Browns season are ready to start talking about Corey Kluber and Jason Kipnis.
I don't know, though, because you know how those Browns fans are. Like, the Browns can do no wrong.
Which is, like, odd, because the Browns pretty much do everything wrong.
They do. I mean, the Browns stink. Okay? Like, we don't want to get into that, but
that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. But yes, right now, pretty much everyone's been bad. You know, up until about this week, there were some signs of life this week. I don't know if you caught those. And the biggest sign of life to me was I was trying to put my son to bed, and he's, like, on my chest falling asleep, and I'm checking the game day on my phone over his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, like, oh, man, you know, so-and-so gave up 3 runs or whatever. And then you check it the next inning, you're like, wait a minute. We scored. Like, we responded. We didn't just, like, pack up our toys and go home.
And just call it a night.
Because that's what had been happening. I have the stat here somewhere from the plane dealer. They have these. They're 2-12 when the opponent scores first. Like, that's just pitiful.
Yeah.
Like, the one stat, they're 1-13 when allowing 3 or more runs in a game. Well, you know, whatever. You're talking about people getting shelled at some point there. Like, but 2-12 when your opponent scores first? I mean, what did we always tell the kids when we were coaching high school when they gave up a run or, like, the game was tied and the other team scored a run? It's like, you were going to have to score to win.
Yeah. We're not shutting, like, everybody out.
Like, come on. I'll give you some other bad stats here.
Can I give you a good stat right now? Jason Kipnis homered again tonight.
I know. We're going to get to that. That's what I'm talking about. There's signs of life this week. And they fought back tonight against the Blue Jays big time. Because they were down by 3, and now I think they're up by 2, right?
No, they're up by 5 now.
Oh, see? There's a point I'm going to make with all this, okay?
All right. this is kind of like mine. We're getting with, like, the negatives and the positives, the ups
exactly.
and the downs. Okay. All right, I like what you're doing. Let's go ahead.
So, everybody wants to say the Indians can't do jack against left-handers. They're 1-8 against left-handed starters. Keep in mind, they just stink overall right now, okay?
Yeah. They even stink against right-handers, so.
They're 7-14. So if they're 1-8 against left-handers, that means they're 6-6,
against 6-6, right?
6-6, yeah. 6-6 against right-handers. So not real great. They haven't won consecutive games since they beat Houston back-to-back in the opening series. That's a problem. people have been lots of quotes of that Lou Brown quote from Major League. You win tonight, then you win tomorrow. You call that a winning streak.
Yeah.
but it's like the really thing that sums up is, like, if it's not one thing, it's another. Because you go through this, you're like, okay, well, they don't fight back very well. They're getting shelled sometimes. Well, they're also 1-9 when they score 3 or fewer runs, so they're not scoring much. Well, they're also 2-3 when they rack up 10 or more hits.
Yeah.
So it's like they don't score when the pitchers pitch well. They don't score when the pitchers pitch poorly. You know, in the club's 14 losses, the pitchers have a 6.09 ERA. In the 7 wins, they have a 1.71 ERA. So, and we could go on and on. Nothing's really going well right now. But this week, there's been signs of life. Carlos Santana has been good pretty much all year, actually. And he's just walking like crazy.
God, man, he's an on-base. Watching his at-bats is like watching... It must be like what watching Michelangelo paint was like.
It really is.
I've never seen someone just understand the strike zone so much.
And I'm sure that Chris Antonetti is like sitting in his office screaming, "I told you! I told you!" he's been good. Michael Brantley, he's been good despite kind of a balky back. He's still been hitting well, and he's starting to hit more doubles this week. I think he hit a home run tonight, so I think that's clearing up a little. And you want to talk about somebody who's come as advertised. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, but Brandon Moss, he's everything that Chris Antonetti said he was going to be. I mean, you guys got some yard tape power, man. Like, holy cripes. And I was watching the game tonight, and Mark Burley, like, it was obvious he wanted, not that he didn't want any part of Brandon Moss because the bases were loaded. He had to go at him.
Right.
But it was obvious what his plan was because there wasn't a single pitch that wasn't on anything but the outside corner, lower third of the plate away. And it was just pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch, down and away, down and away, down and away. And finally, Moss just turned on one and ripped it down the line for a double. And it was like, that's the kind of, you know, that's that one extra, you know, I hate this word, but professional hitter that they needed the last couple seasons. Now, right now, without Yan Gomes in the lineup, you know, they're kind of back to where they were. But that's kind of my second point. This Yan Gomes injury, it was bad. And it really, I think, took the wind out of their sails early on. But he's not going to be out forever. You know, this isn't like when Carlos Santana tore up his knee and was out for a long time.
Yeah.
Or when Buster Posey tore up his knee. Yan Gomes was actually, they said it was going to be 6 to 8 weeks. We're about 3 weeks in. He was out on the field the other day playing catch and taking dry swings. You know, they're not saying like, oh, he's going to be back soon, but everyone's saying he's just blazing through his rehab. I mean, it's going to be tough because it's going to be tough to come back fully because he's going to have to catch, which means he's going to have to squat, which means he's going to have to put a lot of stress on that knee. So I think what you might see in the beginning is Yan Gomes DHing a lot because, man, do they need that right-handed bat.
Yeah. Breaking up some of those lefties.
But you know, Yan Gomes is going to come back eventually, and then Roberto Perez is going to go from treading water to being a really nice backup, and things are going to settle out a little. And that's kind of my overall point, is things are going to get better, and to what you were talking about earlier, you know, Kipnis hitting another home run tonight, and we saw Moss had a nice hit tonight. And it's like this idea of when you have a bunch of guys on a team that are, most of these guys are proven hitters, you know, like there's still some questions about Jason Kipnis, but Carlos Santana, Brandon Moss, Michael Brantley, Yan Gomes, these guys, they're legitimate players. And when they struggle, it's just like, just sit back. Because at some point, if everyone's struggling right now, at some point, everybody's going to get hot at the same time. And that's going to be a lot of fun.
Right. Regression works both ways. At some point, you're going to get closer to the mean.
Exactly. And we're even starting to see that, I think, a little bit with Michael Bourne, actually. Because this week, Michael Bourne didn't apparently take being demoted to the number 9 spot very well. And he's had some nice hits this week. And Nick Swisher is hitting in AAA. I know it's just AAA, but I'd rather he be hitting there than not hitting there.
Right.
And so I think things are going to get better. And The pitching has been okay. I mean, Carlos Carrasco didn't look real sharp tonight. Trevor Bauer, when he's not struggling to keep his fettuccine Alfredo down, has looked really good. TJ House has not looked good, which my argument going into tonight was going to be that last night was the first time all year TJ House pitched on regular rest. Like, they've been bouncing him around, which I don't understand this idea of, like, we don't need our fifth starter, so we're going to let Corey Kluber pitch on 5 days rest and make TJ House wait like 12 days in between starts.
Yeah, and then he had to make that emergency start for Trevor Bauer when he had the food poisoning.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get it, because it's like, well, now, I mean, it would help Corey Kluber out in the long run if he missed, you know, like one start over the course of a season. Like, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. I mean, people pitch on 6 days rest. There's off days in the schedule all the time. I just question whether it was really worth it to make TJ House bounce all around, and now he's been put on the DL with shoulder inflammation today. I don't know if I really buy that, because the first three times through the lineup last night, it was 9 ground ball outs, and then he just, like, exploded.
Yeah.
Either way, they were saying, oh, he's not going to have to pitch till May 9th. Again, we're going to skip him. Well, somebody else is going to have to pitch May 9th, and it's probably going to be either Bruce Chen or Sean Markham, because now TJ House is on the disabled list. But the long-winded point here is, let's not get too excited. If this was the Browns season, we'd be in, like, the fourth quarter of the second game right now. And all that metaphor is supposed to tell you is that it's early. I mean, yeah, like David Murphy said to the Plain Dealer the other day, it's early, but we can't keep saying that forever.
Yeah.
That's true. But right now, it's still early. I mean, Detroit and Kansas City have built up a big lead, but they're not going to play 8 games above 500 the whole way. And I got news for you. If they were or are, we weren't going to catch them anyways. Like, you know what I mean? If Detroit's going to win 105 games, I don't think we were going to win that many games.
Right.
And that's the kind of paces those teams are on right now. So just calm down, Cleveland. This is directed at all of Cleveland.
Cleveland can relax.
Cleveland should relax. What some people are upset about, and I'm upset about too, is the way the roster is constructed. And it's made things a little worse at times in the beginning here where there's been problems. Like, for example, you have Brandon Moss and David Murphy on this team. They both hit left-handed, and they both play corner outfield spots. And they don't play good defense, really, either one of them. Brandon Moss is much better, actually, than David Murphy. Why are they both on the team? Now you might say, okay, well, you got to have a fourth outfielder. Well, up until a few days ago, we had Jerry Sands and Ryan Rayburn, both right-handed, both play corner outfield spots. There's some redundancy in this roster that just doesn't make sense. Now, they corrected some of that when they got rid of Sands earlier this week. But when they DFA'd Sands for a reliever, for Ryan Webb, my first thought was, okay, David Murphy, you're on notice here, because Nick Swisher's about ready to be activated. And when I looked at the roster, I thought, well, when Nick Swisher's ready, they'll just DFA Jerry Sands. Well, they already did that. So I think, you know, David Murphy is probably on borrowed time right now, because I don't know how you fit that all back together again unless you go and lower the number of guys in the bullpen, which the bullpen's been so bad, I don't know if they can find 7 guys they feel comfortable with.
Yeah, I don't think Tito's going to put less people in his bullpen.
I mean, today, I guess, they tried to maybe work around it a little today, because in exchange for TJ House, they brought up Tyler Holt, who I love, Tyler Holt. And he's the one that should be on this team the whole time, because he can play defense in the outfield and he's right-handed. So maybe Tyler Holt goes back down when Nick Swisher comes up. but then you're in the same thing. You don't really have a good defensive replacement other than Mike Aviles, and he's not a defensive replacement in the outfield.
Yeah.
So that's one problem I have, is kind of the way they've structured that, the way they've handled TJ House. I haven't really bought into that being a big benefit. I think it's hurt TJ House more than anything. One thing that's come up, and it kind of goes along with roster management, we've talked about it before, is the way Tito rides certain people in the bullpen. And because we've seen Cody Allen and Brian Shaw struggle early in this year, that argument has kind of come back up to the forefront of, like, Tito ruined these guys because he used them and used them and used them and used them, and now they're all worn hard and put away wet, and
yeah,
they can't get anybody out. I don't know if I really – I mean, there's a danger to overuse, and these guys have been used a lot. But as we talked about in the past, they were used a lot, but they didn't pitch a lot. You know, like, Cody Allen made a lot of appearances, but he didn't make many appearances that went over 20 pitches. And they really, really made a concerted effort not to get him up, sit him down, get him up, sit him down, get him up, sit him down. It was like, when you're up, you're up, you're coming in. I mean, that's a gamble that those things are more important, because the conventional wisdom is appearances are appearances are appearances. And if you go over like 60 appearances in a year for a reliever too many times, you're asking for trouble. And Shaw and Cody Allen have done that the last couple of years. I don't know. Do you think they've been overused and now they're shells of them former self? Or you think it's just early season struggles? I kind of think it's early season struggles with Cody Allen. Brian Shaw, I'm not totally sold on, because he actually kind of doesn't look quite right. Cody Allen, his curveball was looking real bad, and he's really tightened it up the last couple of days, and it's made a big difference in how he's pitching.
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily any evidence to suggest that just because, you know, a player threw X amount of appearances or X amount of pitches last season that it's going to negatively affect his performance, you know, in the following season, which would be this season. You know, like, you look at Cody Allen and it doesn't look like he was abused out there. You know, I'd have to pull up his numbers to see, but, you know, it wasn't like he was making like 90 appearances last season as a relief pitcher. I guess it's different because I don't watch the Indians as frequently as you do, you know, as a Pirates fan. So, yeah, I mean, you look at Cody Allen threw 70 innings last year. That's not outrageous. I don't think that has anything to do with his early season struggles, certainly.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think Brian Shaw is not of the talent of Cody Allen. So I think it's very possible that Brian Shaw is one of those relievers who's going to have a period of dominance and then he's going to fade away. And that period of dominance might be ending. I mean, I could totally get behind that. I mean, we know how fickle bullpens are. I could rattle off a whole list of names, Pirates and Indians relievers, who were dominant for a couple of years and then just didn't have it anymore. And I guess you could point and say that's from overuse, but I really don't think that's the case. I think that's the case of people get put in the bullpen because they don't have the stamina to be starters, and there's only so many bullets in the gun.
Right.
The bullpen's a problem, though. I mean, it's a gut punch when you're struggling to win games and you hand your bullpen leads. But I think Cody Allen's looked better. I think Zach McAllister's out there and he's looked good. I think they need to, which they have been, rely more on Nick Hagedone because he's looked really good. They unfortunately had to option Kyle Crockett down when he was really dealing, just because weird roster problems at the time with people getting hurt and pitchers getting hit in the face with line drives and whatnot. But, and now he's struggling in AAA. But at some point, you know, he's going to get straightened around and he'll be back. And I think you're going to see a guy like Austin Adams or CeCe Lee come back, because I think they need a little bit of that. They need a little help from that next wave. You know, guys like Scott Atchison and Anthony Swarzak can only provide so much. And eventually you're going to see guys like CeCe Lee and Austin Adams and Kyle Crockett and even Sean Armstrong or Sean Morimondo come up and provide the boost that, you know, 4 years ago were Cody Allen and these guys. So I'm not too worried about that. One thing I did want to talk about, because it's all the rage on the Twitter machine, is the impending or not so impending call up of Francisco Lindor to replace Jose Ramirez. Because Jose Ramirez has been pretty brutal, and I'm a big Jose Ramirez fan, and I will admit, it's not been very pretty lately.
He's looked pretty rough.
He's looked really rough and batting right-handed, I think. He's like 1-for-40 or something. Awful, awful stat.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone, of course, is saying, just get Lindor up here, just get Lindor up here. I think that this is probably the worst moment to call up Francisco Lindor. The team's scuffling. He's your number one prospect. He's been touted as your number one prospect for 5 years, 4 years at least. You want to be a little careful about anointing Francisco Lindor the savior of all your troubles. And I think if you call him up at this juncture, it might kind of look like that. Like, all right, kid, it's all on you. Fix it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, Francisco Lindor is a gold glove caliber defensive shortstop, and he could immediately impact the team defensively. Yes, someday he could be a leadoff or number two hitter, but I don't want to put him in that spot right now. And that's really the thing that you're asking from Francisco Lindor, is to be a spark with his bat and his legs. And I don't think you want to put all that pressure on him right out of the chute. How about you?
I would agree with that. As I've been a big fan of how Pittsburgh has handled their prospects, as far as since Neil Huntington has taken over with Andrew McCutchen and Gregory Polanco and those guys, giving them time to develop. They aren't rushing them up. They understand that there's a learning curve for those players, and the more at-bats that you get in AAA, the better off you are. Typically, I think they say 1,000 at-bats is about what you want. Before you come up. So I agree. I mean, and Lindor is a kid, man. How is he 21?
21, I think.
So, I mean, there's no rush. You just, you know, you don't need to. And sure, he could come up and handle himself defensively, but right. I think, like you said, that's not what players are going to be, or not what fans are going to be wanting from their player, you know, their cornerstone prospect.
And don't get me wrong, like, I think Jose Ramirez over-excelled at shortstop last season. He looked like an above-average shortstop, and I think he's an average shortstop. He's an above-average second baseman. So it's like, yeah, you're going to see him boot some balls right now that you don't think he should. And you got to remember, too, like, he came up and replaced Asdrubal Cabrera, who was a below-average shortstop. So he looked amazing.
Right.
But like Jose Ramirez is not that bad of a shortstop. He's average. So the difference in the defense is not going to be much. And again, it's a horrible thing that it's what it comes down to, but you're talking about saving, or you're talking about a difference of maybe, if he develops into the kind of person or player you want him to, about $10 million. For the difference of like one win.
Yeah.
They're never going to do that. Like, they can just wait till June or July and call him up and get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, Jose Ramirez might end up getting sent back to the minors, But all that's going to be coming up in his place is like Michael Martinez.
Yeah.
They're not going to bring Francisco Lindor up in May. They'll just start Mike Aviles every day at shortstop. Which might not be the best thing, but that's what they're going to do.
Right. I don't think it's the worst thing either. I mean, I don't know. I think
there's a lot worse options than Mike Aviles.
Right. I think they're managing Lindor just fine, though. I think the way that Cleveland has approached this, I like it. Just, you know, give your young kids time to develop.
Right.
So, is that it with Cleveland? Do we have more?
I think that's enough.
Because I had something I wanted to bring up that I thought was kind of neat.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, a couple weeks ago, I saw Paul Hoynes tweeted that, it was right after they just got out, they, signed Kluber to that big deal. Paul Hoynes tweeted that all along Corey Kluber had wanted to remain in Cleveland, which I thought was like kind of a cool thing.
That's the guy you want.
You know, for a player like that to say like, hey, this is where I want to be. You know, you guys figure it out.
I think that's the reason it got done.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. If he didn't feel that way with his talent, there wouldn't be a deal. They'd just be going year to year in arbitration. And that last year of arbitration, if they weren't in the playoff hunt, he probably would be getting traded. You know?
Yeah.
They don't have the money. They don't have the funds to keep players of his caliber in Cleveland who don't want to be there.
Right.
So, I mean, it's refreshing, though, you know, to your point.
Right, that there is someone who said, like, hey, this is a place I want to be.
Right.
And I just went out last year and was a hoss for you guys and threw 200 innings, and this is where I want to stay. Like, that's a cool thing. I like that as a fan when you have your players that are saying that.
I agree. And I don't doubt for a minute that Terry Francona is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Terry Francona is a respected manager, and I think, you know, you can say what you want about Nick Swisher's career with the Cleveland Indians, but when they signed him, he was a legitimate player. And part of the reason he came was because of Terry Francona.
Right.
And I think you could say the same. I know they traded for him, but I think if you asked Brandon Moss his opinion of Terry Francona, he would, you know, say, oh, yeah, I love the guy.
Right.
You know, I'd go to hell and back for Tito. And that's, you know, to ring back to some stuff we were talking about, that's one of the things that made me kind of snicker after Cody Allen blew that save and everybody was like, why is Tito leaving him out there, blah 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 blah. And then after, and that was the same game where he didn't have Bourne in the outfield, he had Mike Aviles out there, and the ball got hit over his head and everybody's, you know, telling him he's on crack and whatnot, and Tito just looks at the camera and says, I think Mikey does a pretty good job in center field. And people are just like apoplectic because the ball just got hit over his head that Bourne would have been able to catch. And it's like, have you not been paying attention? Terry Francona is not going to sell anybody down the river unless they're about to get cut. And that's why people like him. And sometimes that causes problems when he doesn't want to, you know, he leaves Bourne in the leadoff spot for, you know, I don't know, a year and a half longer than he should have.
Right.
But that's why his players like him, and that's why guys like Corey Kluber are a part of why guys like Corey Kluber want to stay and Nick Swisher wants to come, and it's nice to hear, though.
Yeah, I think it says a lot about the way that a franchise operates when players like that willingly want to stay in a smaller market, not a great climate to be living in, you know, like kind of plays like Cleveland. And like Cleveland hasn't had, you know, like the Jake, when they built it, was the premier stadium, you know, now it's got some years on its belt, and you know, still, yeah, you have a guy like Kluber who's saying like, this is where I want to be. Like, they've got something good going on there in Cleveland when you have guys saying that.
Yeah, which is why I wonder what they're going to do with David Murphy, because they're not the kind of organization I think that's just going to outright cut him.
Right.
Like, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't know if they'll find somebody to trade him to, but they tend not to treat established players like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's some organizations that A, have the money to burn, so you see it happen more often, but they just don't operate in, it doesn't matter to them. It's like, oh, I don't need this guy anymore. Cut him, you know?
Right.
I'd be shocked if they cut David Murphy, even if they should.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so
that's all I got.
That's all we got for Cleveland there. Well, let's have a quick Seawolves shout out, Jason. We're talking a little bit about the Seawolves. They're currently 6-13, not off to a spectacular start. But, you know, it's minor league baseball, so you're not super concerned about the records.
I think they cut some guys today.
Did they?
I saw it in the Erie Times. I didn't read the article, though.
Yeah, I'll have to go take a look at the transactions page. So, Dean Green, fan favorite Dean Green, who primarily plays designated hitter. I think they've bounced him around the field a little bit last year, but he started off the year just blazing hot. He was triple slashing 412, 512, 647. Two home runs, seven walks, four Ks, and 34 at bats.
Boom goes the dynamite.
He's currently on the 7-day DL because they have that in the minor leagues, which is a pretty rad thing. So I don't know. I didn't see a projected timetable for when he's back, and I didn't look at the lineup tonight to see whether he was in the lineup tonight. But keep your eye on Dean Green, man. He's a big boy.
Yes, he is.
Third baseman Corey Jones, he's off to a pretty decent start as well with a 313, 421, 375 triple slash. So no home runs, but hitting the ball well to start off the season. Now the pitching, which Seawolves president Greg Coleman told us was going to be pretty strong for the team this year, has not been so great to start the year. And
oops.
And fan favorite, my favorite player on the Seawolves, the Thunder from Down Under.
Oh, podcast, no, don't favorite, tell me.
Ozzie Warwick Saupold is sporting a 10.29 ERA in his three starts to start the year.
Ooh.
Yeah, not great starts. So Chad Green, he has an ERA of 9.19 in his four starts. Brennan Smith has seven appearances so far this season with a 14.04 ERA to start the year. Not a lot of great pitching. Been exciting games. Because there have been a lot of runs coming across the plate, primarily for the other team. But
I suppose so.
Yeah, and so these guys aren't getting very deep into games. We're seeing a lot of relievers that you probably traditionally wouldn't see going out there. But some of these guys just aren't. You know, they're not getting them through the fourth, fifth inning. So hopefully things get better for the Seawolves over the next couple days. Hopefully things get better for Warwick Saupold. Man, I want him to just go out there and shove his next three starts just to get that ERA back down to where it belongs.
He can do it.
I have faith in him. So, yeah, we've been going to a couple Buck Nights. The first two Buck Nights were rained out, and we went to our last Buck Night. The Smith's hot dogs were phenomenal. And Smith's and the Seawolves just announced that they were keeping their relationship going. I think they signed, I can't remember how long the deal was, but I think they extended their deal with the Seawolves. Smith did. So you're still getting the premier hot dog in the region when you go to Geriat Park. So,
there you go.
And I don't know if you saw the other day, I posted on the Facebook page, someone was at the Kansas City Royals game, which the food in Kansas City has just been getting lambasted the last like 6 months.
Ooh. Yeah,
between the postseason and the start of this season, but they had like Dollar Dog Day at Kansas City, and if you haven't seen it, go to the Facebook page and just scroll down a little bit, you'll see it. It was the nastiest looking hot dog. Like, oh,
I mean,
disgusting.
We're talking about hot dogs here,
and so I guess
none of them look that good,
right? Yeah, to begin with. So this one looked like it had just gone through the ringer. And so apparently the fan, like, their story was they took it back and they said, like, hey, man, I'm not eating this. And the employee's response was, well, you paid a dollar. What did you expect?
Oh,
yeah. How would you like that response? So I always appreciate when I go to, you know, when I go to Geriat, and I know they're pumping out thousands of hot dogs on some of these Buck Nights. And, you know, you still get a decent dog for a dollar.
That's right. That's because they're Smith dogs.
They're Smith hot dogs. The buns are nice and, you know, not just a wrinkled mess of disgusting wet bread. So yeah, you know, get to the Yacht, get some good food, watch some great baseball. So I think that's it today. Anything else we want to add?
No, I think that's it.
We covered a lot. We discussed a lot. A lot of ups and downs in this podcast. It was quite the emotional roller coaster.
It's been baseball season so far.
I would agree. I would agree. A 12-10 crazy start to the season. And it's looking good right now. AJ Burnett's been shoving for the Pirates so far tonight against St. Louis. So I gotta hurry up and stop watching Statcast here and actually put the game on.
Yeah, and apparently Carlos Carrasco, I saw on, he wasn't doing very well in the beginning, right around the time that we got on, started podcasting here. And I saw on Twitter someone said that Mickey Callaway went out and literally accosted Carlos Carrasco. And he seems to have responded, because I don't think he's given up a run since then.
I look forward to watching that replay.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
All right, Jason, well, that's going to wrap us up for today. We'd like to again thank our listeners and ask, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you give us a rate and review. Again, we'll be podcasting sporadically whenever we can get one in between daddy duties. In the meantime, you can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.